cliffcentral.com.
Welcome to the Futurology Show. Hello, B2.
Hey, everyone.
What's up?
I did this at the end of last year. Just how tired I was that the year is like, and I'm feeling exactly the same way after a break in January. It's like,
but January is the longest month of the year. I mean, it's a fact.
Really?
Financially, no, it just is.
Oh, really?
Everyone's like coming back from holidays, carrying their credit card debt around with them and moaning about it, and then trying to get back into work. It's just not the easiest thing in the world.
I'm sure most people have got very high hopes for 2017, and I think it's going to be a great year. But it does feel like it's like 2016, the sequel. It feels like there was this mild little hiccup at the end of 2016 and we just carried on.
Do we go dum 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 or is it not for one of those?
I think it's everybody's already thinking that. I don't have it ready either, sorry.
No, I think I'm very optimistic about it. Well, you called this year, what did you call this year?
The Age of Experience.
Experience. I like that.
No, that's been playing on my head a lot, and I think it's for another show. But the whole idea, like, we're on the Futurology Show, but the Age of Experience.
Oh, where am I?
But the Age of Experience, I mean, the only people that we need to worry about having experiences are humans. Not things. So we're beyond the bots. We don't really care if the bots are having a wonderful experience. They're there to be part of the experience. But that leads to the question, what is the future of humans?
And if it's our experience.
And our future.
Yeah.
And if the experience enables us to the point where we become so lazy, we really are heading towards those fat Wally humans on floating chairs.
I tell everyone that story every time it comes up.
But it's terrifying me. It's like the self-fulfilling prophecy. Like Wally has decided that in some distant future, or not too distant future, we're actually going to end up being this bunch of useless people reliant on this connected technology.
Well, I'm gonna do you a favor. Whatever you do, do not go to a gym, because the January people are at gym. You might think that
that's
Wally
the new name for a pub,
through.
Isn't it, these days?
Yeah. So you might see some of those Wally type people lying on some machines and they're trying to get rid of December.
Well, at least they've identified the problem.
You know, normally I look forward to my mornings at gym and there's normally some nice talent, but I haven't seen it yet. It's kind of Wally on benches and that. Anyway, so app of the week. This one I actually have to give Cade credit. So Cade's my 10-year-old son. It's called Share It. So it's Share and IT. Mm-hmm. Now, if you've ever... Okay, so I think just to paint the melee, Cade is on Android, I'm on Apple. So already you've always got clashes and issues, okay? But what it based, and it's Android and iOS, but what Share It does, if you've ever tried to send a picture or file or something to someone, you can do it with Bluetooth, okay? Share It makes Bluetooth look like snail. It flies, okay? So you can share, but this is why the little monster found it. Being an Android user and understanding what an APK is and what the value of an APK folder and file is, him and his mates are taking turns and making their pocket money last longer. So one will buy one app and then share it to the others. Another one will buy another and share it. So they're actually transferring apps to each other, but it sends the whole package across. So I'm not advocating that we should be sharing apps. You can also share free apps, but the point is
you're not advocating for your son's
freedom, I'm not.
Safety, and security either.
No, I'm not, and that's a lecture that we have had. I think now Doctress Doom music is apt. But even what is nice about those is the Android to iOS. So you obviously can't share an app between the two. But if you've got a photo or something like that, it shares really well and really quickly. Music is the best because music's a pain in the ass to send over Bluetooth.
Yeah.
It just, you take the file and you send it. It's great. So Share It, Shareit. And yeah, courtesy of a 10-year-old. I mean, it's like, I learned so much from this little guy. It's actually amazing.
It is incredible how the next generation, like, we thought we were pretty smart.
Yeah.
And then we thought, like, the guys 10 years younger than us were, like, okay, smart, but I wish they just would have some humility with it.
Yeah.
But,
no,
like,
kids.
Our kids are doing some amazing stuff. Like, my 3-year-old is, she knows how to do everything on iPads and touchscreens, and it's insane.
Well, I'm going to get a fist pump from our guest now because the other thing that he wants is a Windows machine because he's decided that Apple's also not for him when it comes to computers.
Your son?
Yes, at 10. I'm watching the smile. Lucky her mic is off, so we don't get a comment yet. But yeah, he wants a Windows machine. I said, why do you want a Windows machine? Have you not listened to my show?
Is it a Razer or a Predator?
No.
Like, then maybe I can say,
so,
okay.
So, first of all, he goes, I don't have to listen to your show. I hear you talking all day long at home. So, bazinga. Number one, I mean, that's my son. But no, he needs a Windows machine because he can put in scripts and get hacks and do things that he can't do on a Mac, and he can get his games that he wants. I'm like, oh, here we go. So I'm going to have some form of disease coming into my house sometime soon.
If you think of it, you're kind of already working the investment into your retirement. If he does it all well and he ends up being a white hat and not completely awful, then it could be quite fortunate.
Yeah. So I'm not giving Microsoft any more airtime.
Or money. Other sides of things.
Well, I'll capitulate it in Xbox. Because okay, at least that's fun, you know. But that's about as Microsofty as I'm going to get.
So Share It was the app.
Share It. Good. Yeah. So tell us what happened this day and forever ago.
So apparently this day throughout history has actually been quite interesting. So I've got a couple of dates if you don't mind indulging me. But
sure.
In January of 1883 was the first electric lighting system that was employed using overhead wires built by Thomas Edison. So thank you, father of electricity. That went a long way. And I think if we had to be back in 1883 doing the Futurology show then, well, we couldn't, because that hadn't happened yet. It was only in 1903 on this day that the first transatlantic radio transmission was originated from the United States in Massachusetts. The next day, they decided that they weren't going to do just transatlantic. They were actually going to go from US and England. And now we've got people talking. So you look at these big milestones, and that was 20 years apart, the first electricity wires being put in, the first radio transmission being put in, and then 20 years later was the first radio telegraph message sent from the Netherlands to the Dutch East Indies. And we can do all of that on our devices that every single human being has. So again, we probably could have started the Futurology show in 1903, but not before then.
Well, we couldn't have, because we're internet-based. Not radio based.
True story. But if we had rubbed two copper wires together and put them in the right direction, we probably could have got something going.
One of my mates who listens to the show was chuckling about your comment last week with CES, when we started talking about CES.
Yes.
And like, if we'd been at CES in 18, it was Morse, you know? It's like everyone coming to this big. He was like, dude, how can you even bring Morse code into a tech chart? So, but it's important. That's where it comes from.
Yeah.
I'm actually going to turn Celeste's mic on, because although we're at the stage where we're chatting generally, I think she'd probably have some nice comments and chirps, especially when I start talking about Windows and some of the next topics I can see lined up here. I know she'll want to have a go at me, but remember, I do have control of the mic.
Cool.
So Celeste Nordia from Pod3D, not your first time on the show, but your first time in our new studio.
Yes.
What do you think?
Lovely.
It's nice, eh?
Love it. Very nice.
Of course. And what do you think of the studio?
Love the studio.
All right. So Celeste is with Pod3D. It's a digital agency, and she heads up social. She's a social media wizard, guru, person, adjective, carry on. But obviously, well, not obviously, for those that listened to the last show, we were talking more about augmented reality, and I think we touched on virtual reality then. We hadn't quite got into it yet. And the reason I turned your mic on is that, as you know, Brett and I talk about VR and AR every week. And this week is no different, because I found some awesome pearls. So, yeah, nice to have you on the show. And
thanks.
Please, your mic is on for now. If you get too cheeky with me, your mic will be off for then. So, VR. Actually, I want to finish on the radio, Brett. So, 1903, transatlantic.
Yes.
So, what's that? 114 years-ish.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, exactly.
Oh, exact. It's this day. Sure. Okay, I'm still in holiday mode. That actually is quite something.
Yeah.
But also what it does show us is that if you think about radio and to where we are now, okay, I mean, internet radio and streaming, and that is what, 10 years old, maybe?
Yeah,
5, 10 years
probably
old.
Probably about 2 years old. I think a lot of people have been really
not just South Africa. I'm talking about like globally, the ability to stream radio stations. Probably about 10 years.
So I was in London in 2005, and that was the beginning of the DVB DVR thing. So the digital video streaming.
So that's
and all that
10,
stuff.
12 years.
Yeah.
All right. But in 100 years, that's all we've achieved. Like, it's been radio.
It's gotten better.
Sure, but I mean, it just shows. You know, like we didn't do much in radio for 100 years, and then all of a sudden, jump.
You look at what we did achieve in the last decade. It's pretty terrifying.
Very.
There was a thing on LinkedIn that went around, and I don't have it open at the moment, but it was a list of things that didn't exist 10 years ago.
No, absolutely.
And it's like, holy crap, that's amazing.
Yeah, technology is scary.
It
makes you wonder where we're going to be 10 years from now, or even 100 years from now.
Exactly.
It's, you know, if the Earth survives.
Yeah, that's a big question.
Which is a big question. I just, our kids are going to know extraordinary things, and their children.
I got news for you. Your kids already know extraordinary things. They're just playing it down.
They do. You know, to get back to what Brett was saying earlier, Carla, my 2-year-old, loves YouTube. So she has all her little shows that she watches on YouTube. And she already knows how to skip the ad.
Do you have YouTube Kids,
screen?
By the way?
Pardon?
Do you use YouTube Kids?
No.
So there's a great app called YouTube Kids.
I've actually heard about it,
and
but I've never used it.
If you're a parent and your kids are doing that and they're data thieves of note, and you can also regulate what they watch, because maybe just on open YouTube, they can watch whatever they want. They open presents, and there's all these Russian people doing vampires killing Elsa and Anna from Frozen.
No, we've got restricted mode on. So,
so YouTube Kids does a timer.
Excellent.
You can put a timer thing. You can restrict how much they view. So if they want to just do it before bed or whenever you want to allow them to do it. But you can also put restrictive mode. So you can also be age-appropriate content will be served to them.
She kind of just, like, if she doesn't like what she's watching, she knows how to minimize the screen, back from full screen, go down the list, pick what she wants. And
seamlessly, hey?
Seamlessly. She's 2. I mean, she can't even speak properly yet. She still wears a diaper, and she can YouTube.
It's actually incredible.
Scary.
Huh?
It's scary.
But you know the funny thing?
Yeah.
But you must have fun with your kids now. So if, and I know that your family uses Android and Windows. So Cade has now figured out how to put OK Google in for auto listen. So you don't actually have to open the Google app. So you can be playing Minecraft with it and go, OK Google, and it brings up.
As
a parent.
Dave and I were just chatting about this on the way.
But here's the best part. While he's playing, I walk up behind him and I go, OK Google. So he's in the middle of a battle and this window.
OK Google, close Warcraft.
That's awesome, yeah.
So if you want to piss your kids off, that's the best. But, you know, you're talking about YouTube Kids, which I do know about, and then screen time controls and that. This is our biggest challenge now. It's actually addictive. When we were kids, our parents were worried about sweets, Coke, I don't know, chips, anything. You know, that was our addiction.
Yeah.
This freaking internet and the always on devices. But, I mean, the fights that we have with our kids. Yours is still a little bit young, but you've got kids as old as mine and younger. It's ridiculous. Yeah. You know, and if you put a parent app on, they override it.
Yeah.
They Google it and they figure out how to override. I mean, it's
very scary.
It is terrifying.
It's mad.
There was a great picture in LinkedIn. There was a share where when we were kids, like, our parents had to, like, drag us into the house. Like, it's time to come in now. It's getting too dark. Stop playing outside. I hope that's type of the lifestyles that we were living when we were kids.
Yeah.
Today, it's like, you need to go outside. Did you realize that there's something happening?
There's a tree to climb.
Yes. Yeah, go break an arm. You're 4. You haven't broken anything.
Isn't there an app for that? Exactly. No, we didn't go away over December because we were busy renovating. And so we spent a lot of time at home. And my kids are very fortunate in the fact that they've got a very large garden. We've got animals and a treehouse and bikes and pools and everything. And most days, because we limit Xbox time to an hour a day, strict rule. Yeah. Obviously, being in technology, we know that this could become a problem quite quickly. And we've got all the gadgets and gizmos because of what we do. Mm. And they would get bored. They would drive me insane because we have nothing to do.
Yeah,
but, you know, go play outside. Go climb in your treehouse. Go swim. We got them one of these pogo sticks for Chris. They actually don't know what to do with themselves if they're not sitting in front of a flat screen or in front of a tablet or a phone. And it is something that as parents
The Wally humans are going to be real if we don't start.
But it actually starts at school,
children around.
Right?
It does.
You actually have to blame school to a point as well, because now the kids are using tablets in school.
Yeah.
So they're like, but I'm working. You know, no, but you're not. Minecraft does not work. No, it's a project. Anyway, it's just, I don't know. There isn't a solution for it. We could probably do 7 shows on this topic.
Oh, for sure.
But the scary thing is that, you know, in the old days, you learned from your parents. I think it's now role reversal. We're learning from our kids, you know?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Anyway, so I want to go into VR. Did you have something? No?
Yeah. Oh, just on that topic of, like, going out and getting stuff done. Like, how are we going to find our next sportsman? Because on this day in 2015 was the day that AB de Villiers made the fastest century in one-day cricket. So he
Which
made
was?
100 runs and 31 balls.
That's ridiculous.
Wow. And it was 2 years ago today. So he's coming up for the next round of games coming up, and I really hope he can do that again. But we're going to lose that type of sportsman if we don't get kids doing stuff. And if schools don't start implementing a reason for – playing sport, going outside, doing something else. And there's certain things you can't, like motor coordination, I don't think it's going to improve by just watching a video on it.
I have to admit, though, at our school, our children are forced to do extramurals. I don't know if it's like that at all schools. My kids are obviously in Afrikaans school, so it's very old school. But they are forced to do two extramurals. So whether they choose athletics, tennis, karate, whatever, they have to do it. And I think that's a great way of schools implementing the fact that you still do need to be active. You know, even though we do live in a time where technology has made everything so simple and easy, it's important to be outside. It's important to take part in competitive and team sports. It really is. It's such a big part of their social development. So I think we're very lucky in the sense that they are forced to do sports.
So normally I would say, well, not normally because it's new, like send a WhatsApp if you want to chat to us. But I see, because it's a Windows machine, our WhatsApp machine, our WhatsApp engine is not working. So don't send a WhatsApp. But hit us on Twitter.
Hashtag Futurology.
Hashtag Futurology. Well, I have someone in here who might be fixing our WhatsApp, so I'll stay tuned. But anyway, so I want to move into VR. There's a company called Hypersuit who have just launched the Exoskeleton. Okay. So basically you put on your headset and then you lie down in the flying position and you fly and you can be, but you can play like plane simulation fighting games like dogfighting. So your whole body movement will move. So it kind of takes the whole remote control off the table, which has always been a challenge that we've had when we chat about VR. Again, concepts, very expensive hardware, but the thing is that they're thinking about it. So basically, Hypersuit exoskeletons, definitely something to watch. This is an interesting one, seeing we're talking about kids in it. They are now calling for VR standards of ethics. Okay, so whoever they are, you know the famous they. So the Virtual Reality Society has outlined that they have two ethical concerns. First, that users could become desensitized to realistic violence. Now, we've talked about that before. You're in this world and you're shooting shit, you know?
Yeah.
And then the second is that criminal activity can occur in VR, such as child pornography. Because you're locked off from everything else and you're in your own private world and your own private thing, people can't actually, inverted commas, see what you're seeing and what you're doing. So they're now discussing how violent games should have age restrictions, which I know they do already. I mean, I've seen like that new Mortal Kombat had an 18 on it and it said something. No, really, 18. You know, it wasn't like you can still buy it for your kids like people did with Grand Theft Auto and that. But also they need to establish a moral code. Now, how do you establish a moral code in a society that's becoming so immoral where you can go and kill things and shoot and chop and change all in real time? So I don't know. But they're now looking at putting a standard of ethics together. So they're trying to regulate the unregulated,
well,
I suppose.
That was the discussion we had with Brett Sinclair at the end of last year, was how things like blockchain are starting to regulate digital process and how social media is going to become a little bit more regulated or more accountable for some of the things that are being done. So it crosses so many legislative jurisdictions through the world that it's hard to regulate because it is a global thing.
Sure.
So and apart from taking China's approach and just getting rid of it completely, things like Facebook and Twitter there's got to be some regulation, and they are going to start doing some sort of share chain, blockchain type of vibes happening on there.
Okay, but here's the question.
And I think it's important that
who's responsible for that, though?
But it comes down to censorship as well. And one of the key winning things around the internet and this open source collaborative world is that, you know, censorship's sort of fallen a little by the wayside, but we need to have some sort of protection, especially over, we were talking about YouTube kids and people getting involved. But yes, it's virtual reality, yes, it's a game, but people are still being, you know, the brain paths are being created where, you know, violence is okay. And there's that whole psychological argument that violence incites violence. So,
yeah, absolutely. And this is not just a problem with virtual reality. This has been a problem since Second Life came out, and people could immerse themselves in a world that cut them off from the real world.
So
I don't think virtual reality as such is really where it needs to be regulated, like you said, Brett. I think it needs to be regulated on a global scheme, in terms of gaming, but then also network gaming. Anything where you can connect into reality, that's social media is a great example.
Exactly. And it's getting more real.
It is getting more real. It is getting more real. And it's so much easier to be in contact with the world now.
Yeah. But it's, yeah.
Yeah, you connect from your phone.
Exactly. There's so many points of connection. And the thing is, we can climb into the bandwagon and say technology this and VR that. And it's not just – it's not technology's fault. It's not VR's fault. I mean, when we were kids, we played with guns. We used to play cops and robbers and cowboys and Indians. And there was that type of stuff that, you know, parents would regulate. It was still available, but there was still parental requirement. And I think that's – parenting needs to get up there. I think there needs to be better apps for how we parent things if we're going to be that connected.
100%.
But it's down to humanity to actually start regulating. We shouldn't rely on the platforms and the technology to regulate. Nobody regulated whether you could buy a BB gun in the Pick and Pay. You just, you know, society and people. So that's the fear of the future of humans that I'm sort of subtopicking this chat about is how do we regulate ourselves with the technology that we have access to? It's not the technology's fault. It's society.
Well, leading off on that, it's going to get worse. They did a recent poll for gamers, or game developers. And I know everyone sitting in this room develops and produces cool stuff. They found that more of them are interested in VR headsets than the Xbox One. So I'm talking about, the guys that are building for platform. Yep. All right. They did a poll of 4,500 developers. Now, that's substantial. Yep. It's not like they went and spoke to three people. Remember that we had that one quote the other day? Like, they asked 10 people something. It's like, what? It was like, our phone doesn't do this.
Three out of four people make up 75% of the world's population. Yeah. It's like,
there's this 4,500 developers that actually developed the last Game Developers Conference. And they said that in the last 3 years, they've been to a game conference.
Yeah.
And they are currently developing titles for VR.
Yeah.
And doing so more then they're worrying about like the Xbox or PlayStation.
One of the stats.
So that's interesting.
One of the stats coming out of CES around that is on the CES.tech website, 77% of consumers are willing to purchase VR equipment. So anybody saying, "Oh, VR is just a fad or it's not going anywhere," it doesn't look like it's going to go anywhere anytime soon. And with 77% of consumers willing to actually spend the money on some of these more expensive VR solutions, we don't just want Google Cardboard anymore. We want a fully immersive, high definition, ready to rock and roll, engaging solution. That's where leading into the age of experience. We know that this technology is available. Now we want it to be great. We don't just want to have something that can do it. We want something that can do it well. That's sort of the human need.
And to take it to market. I mean, to use it as a marketing tool. It's a fantastic marketing tool. Yeah. Like augmented reality was. I just think virtual reality is the logical next step.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, in fact, look, Apple's hedging AR. I mean, I'm going to discuss some of that a bit later on as well.
Built-in AR, which is nice.
They're looking at that. But I think you can't get to VR without AR. The learnings of AR have helped us create now VR and MR, mixed reality.
Yeah.
I see our WhatsApp numbers back up. So if anyone does want to chat in on it, 078-748-2090. And I've tweeted it out as well. Or just hit us on Twitter and hashtag Futurology.
Excellent.
So now I'm going to have to maybe see if I really am a man of my word or if I'm like Trevor Noah and the rest of them that said, if Trump gets in, we're all leaving. But Nokia has confirmed the Android release. Now, I've always said that the day that Nokia makes an Android phone...
Trump will be the president. It was your fault.
I didn't say that. I've always said that the day they make an Android phone, I will probably give up iOS. So, it has been slated. The Nokia N6 will release in China. It will release with Nougat. So, Nougat is now Android 7. So, it's the latest version. I've seen some pictures of it, and I must say, it is a super sexy device.
Oh, really?
It does it. They've taken the learnings of the Lumia, which was a sexy device as well, except for it had Windows on it. And it really is a good-looking device. They're saying that it might be as early as March that it hits Europe. So we could start to see Nokia coming back from the dead. Will they challenge Samsung? Look, at least their batteries won't blow up. We hope. But
you saw that picture of I charged my Samsung Note 7 in my Ford Cougar. There's a nuclear fallout.
Okay, so
brilliant.
For those listening overseas, we have a car here called the Ford Cougar, which is like a big eco sport. I don't know what it's badged over. I don't know if it's around the world. It might be the Escape. You're right. And we've had 45 of them.
Which is all you want to do if you're in one.
That was good. We've had 45 of them catch on fire. And the jokes will be going around between using a Note 7 and a Ford Cougar. In fact, the best was there was a pile of ashes, and it was like Ford Cougar going cheap. And I was like, no, I actually wanted the blue one. I don't like this gray color. But anyway, so I want to go.
Sorry,
yeah,
going
yeah.
back.
Yeah, yeah.
A couple of years ago, Ford made that partnership with Microsoft where they were going to put the sync technology, the Bluetooth sync technology into cars. And I said, well, there goes the neighborhood. Like the Ford, I mean, back in the day, Ford was called Found on Road Dead or Fix Repair Daily. And there's all those jokes of that. Now it's like Fiery on Road.
Fire on Road Daily or something like that. Yeah.
So I always joked, like, I don't want to buy a Ford that's got Microsoft in it because it would, like, you'd literally get a blue screen error in the fast lane of the highway. And it's terrifying when stuff like that actually starts to happen. Not that I'm blaming the link between Microsoft and Ford, but you can't predict these things. You shouldn't be able to predict these things. And it's kind of scary when somebody does playfully predict these things and something awful happens.
No, absolutely.
But what's happened in the sort of age of experience and technology is that service has come to the fore. It's about how you react to things that are happening in marketplaces or products or services. And just one thing, like, I drive a Ford, but I was a bit disappointed in Ford's reaction to what was happening. And I think there's a lot of accountability because of consumers now these days. The connected consumer is holding a lot of brands accountable and products accountable. And I think you're going to see a lot more of that. So Ford is maybe just the beginning of it because it's so on the Ford, people are the sheep burning. But there's
Ford won't be sponsoring our show. Samsung won't be sponsoring
Ford.
Our show.
There was no
Microsoft won't be sponsoring. We're doing well.
Look, we're
well, Apple might.
I think Apple doesn't do shit.
I think
for
being
anyone.
Brand agnostic allows us to possibly look at telling the truth a lot more. I think that's one of the key things. I think there's not enough of that.
No, definitely.
No, you're right. But we haven't sold out.
But all brands, if you have a brand or a product that goes to lots and lots of people, and if something goes wrong with it, own it. Like live up to. You'll probably get more kudos out of owning
100%.
It and it being better forefront customer experience than hiding it. 45 people. What? Come on.
I agree, but what do you say?
Well,
like, how would you handle that kind of?
Why don't you answer
fallout?
That question? I mean, you run social. What happens? Let's take one of your clients.
Don't even say
name
nothing.
It. No.
I completely agree. And I think obviously the go-to generic response would be something like, "We are investigating why this has happened. Please give us some time." Blah blah blah, that kind of thing. But I think in some situations, you're kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't.
Yeah, I think this is probably one of those situations.
Yes.
But are you more damned if you – and that's – I actually –
We've
got to
get back into the Nokia
into
Android discussion because this is a massive segue that we've just jumped into.
No. I just wanted to mention Nokia. Yeah. I was actually using Nokia to lead into HTC, funny enough. But – and you know me. Look, a squirrel. But this is my point, okay? And I'm going to – and this is why I also wanted you on the show today. I had a problem with a – company brand. I'm seeing your mouth curl because I know and you're going to say that.
And
but so do you, and so does everyone else.
No,
here's my problem. I had a problem with a company that was doing something wrong. So I did the good old fashioned thing and I picked up a telephone because this is my father-in-law. He says, "Why don't you just phone? Because it doesn't get you anywhere."
It doesn't.
So I phoned, and I got bounced to another division. You know how you do? Mm. Oh no, sorry, you've come through to the X division. And I'm definitely not going to bury them because my thing hasn't been resolved yet. And
I read something on Facebook.
But I'm just saying,
yeah.
So I do it. And eventually, no, that was a different one. And eventually, I get cut off. So I'm now on the fifth or the sixth or whatever it is.
It's so frustrating.
So I put the phone down, I pick up my phone, like I disconnect the phone call and I use my phone for what it should be used, which is social. And I jumped on and I tagged them and I buried them. And within an hour, I got a notification or a phone call or something like that. It hasn't resolved the problem, but I got the reaction. So as a community manager and someone, and I know you run multiple accounts. I know I've worked with you over the years. But the point is that if something like this Ford Kuga or even the Samsung Note, Samsung owned it, Brett.
Yeah,
they owned it. They made a recall. They even made an effort to kill the phones. Mm. My colleague had a Note 7. And he got a notification saying, "You have not returned your phone. It will terminate on the 12th of December."
One way or another, this thing is
actually
ticking.
Popped up. It will brick. Okay. Please bring it in now. And you've got a Google Pixel and happy, happy, happy. But the point is, surely you have to own it. Even if it's a bad thing, you have to own it.
You absolutely have to own it. You have to own it as a brand and you have to take responsibility for your products. Absolutely. The question from my side is not always whether you're going to own it. How do you own it?
Yeah.
What do you do? How do you turn it around into something positive?
Yeah.
Have you got some quick tips on that? I mean, as you know, there's brands out there that obviously are still running their own.
Give
stuff.
Us the golden rule.
No, but it's a case of like, we threw a big train smash at you. What do? Do you speak to the client first? If you're outsourcing, if you're insourcers, do you go to your bosses? Do you just react? What's the right do's
I mean,
and don'ts?
Each of the brands I run is obviously different.
Sure.
So a lot of the brands do require us to go back to client with you know, various suggestions from our side, but not necessarily reacting from our side. And then some of the brands have obviously given us free rein as we've worked with them over many years.
Trust.
So I think if there was a massive fallout like that, obviously you would meet with your client and you would suggest having a campaign to limit the fallout and break the damage. So like you said, Samsung did.
Yeah.
Called the phones and went out onto social media saying this was our screw up.
Yeah.
Something has gone wrong, but this is what we are doing to rectify the situation. Yeah. If you have an issue, call us here, email us here, tweet at us. The interesting thing is, and this might be a little bit off topic, is that
I think we're very much off topic for Futurology at the moment.
But okay, we'll go back on topic.
If I just in closing, is a lot of companies have taken social media as a great way to communicate with them.
Yeah.
And one of those, strange enough, is City of Johannesburg. So
if
you have I have to give kudos to City of Johannesburg. If you've got an issue, you can now log it through Twitter.
Yep.
Directly at their handle.
And you get the hashtag, yeah.
They give you a reference number over Twitter, and you can follow up on that reference number.
What a great way of getting fast, responsive thing to a large audience.
Have you tried phoning City of Johannesburg?
I've tried phoning them. Yeah, phoning them is awful.
It's you sit on the phone for hours and hours and hours.
Because they're all busy on Twitter, so just get them to Twitter.
So, City of Johannesburg sponsor our show.
Please, but we had a cable in our road that fell down, broke. It was an open, exposed cable. So obviously this is a danger for people, pedestrians and that. And we reported only through Twitter. They were there in like 20 minutes, got an SMS update. So yes, if you guys do need to contact those kind of, I think Joburg Water is the same.
Yep.
You can contact them through Twitter and do everything now. So guys, you need to get onto Twitter because it's
awesome.
Way everything's going.
But that's again, customer service. It's going to lead. So age of experience is going to lead to brands engaging with customers in a way that service is better.
See, we went roundabout and came back to age of experience.
No, but that's the thing. Philosophers have got a way of justifying a lot of discussions.
Exactly.
Right.
But, I've got to finish the thought because you've got to make sure that the service is always at the fore. And I think Ford have kind of got, and I do want to stop this, but Ford have gotten into a problem where they're like the ombudsman got involved before they did something.
Yes. Yeah.
No,
and that's a problem.
Yeah. No, it is
so you've
problem.
Got to try and be, in the age of experience, in the age of instant connectivity, there is no excuse for not being proactive with fixing a problem. If you can see something going pear-shaped, it's all about the experience. It's all about what people are going to say because it takes more to dig yourself out of a terrible experience surface hole than it does sort of proactively get in front of the train.
Absolutely. No, I agree.
Okay, and I think we're done with that topic for now. We can bring it up. If somebody ever has anything else, we don't want this to be a bitch and moan session, but these are important. I think sometimes we need that place to vent.
Yes.
Correct.
We'll stop
Wednesday
it now.
Is 12
we'll
to 1.
Now.
Yeah.
So,
Gareth's from Android. 9 to 12.
From Android to social and Ford and City of Johannesburg, back to HTC. Okay.
Nokia. Nokia 6.
Yes.
And there's already rumors of a Nokia 8.
Yes. It'll be size and process adjustment.
Check. So they're going with the number process.
I did work for Nokia. I worked on the Nokia piece of business when I was still in agency days.
Yeah.
They always released an 8 and a 9.
Yeah.
Always. And the 8 would do da-da-da, and the 9 would do, it was a size difference, it was a processor difference.
The 3310, the 3310.
So there was always a dual release at the same. In fact, Nokia was slated over their entire career or presence about flooding the market with multiple phones because there was always another Nokia phone coming out.
They were catering for a while.
But that's why. They actually are catering. So if they prepare to gear up and do the production and it doesn't affect the price, then don't slate it. There's a phone for you.
So the Nokia 8 is also called the Nokia Supreme. So that'll be interesting.
There it is. Yeah. So they change it. So 6 will be the entry and 8 will be the big boy.
Yeah.
Nokia, if you're listening, 8 for me, please. So HTC, I must say, I've always loved HTC. It's one of the most underrated brands out there. They've won numerous awards and even Handset of the Year at Mobile World Congress.
Yeah.
But now I have to give them a slap across the head.
Oh.
They've gone up to they've come up with their stupid dual screen thing. Remember we saw that dual screen along the LG?
Where it's not really
a dual screen, but it's a little thing.
Yeah.
Why copy them? And if they are, is this the new trend we're gonna see? I don't know if you've seen what I'm talking about. Like there's a phone, I think it's the LG. Mm-hmm. So you've got your normal screen, right? But then right at the top is like almost an emoticon action bar. So when your screen goes off,
it goes
dark, that's there. So if a message comes, you can tap it. It's like a quick launcher, like a launch bar on a computer. So as far as I know, LG pioneered it. HTC, you're welcome to prove me wrong, but I only saw yours after I saw theirs. Mm-hmm. So I really hope we're not going this route where all the phones are going to start coming. You don't need it. It's called an app and it's called a quick launcher.
Well, the two big things to answer on sort of your mobile phones at the moment is bigger screens, bigger, better screens, and bigger, better battery life.
Bigger, better, better.
So it's all, well, it's always going to be bigger, better. That's the idea of tech. It's how do we get people to buy it? But the screens specifically, but linked to the screens, it's going to be battery.
Battery's a big issue.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But you know, it's funny. Is that we had trends where we had these, like, we started with phones being big because they had to be. You had to put shit inside them. Mm. Then they went, like, really small. Do you remember little Ericsson and little Nokias and
talking
all
about
that?
That Nokia, do you remember the little red one?
Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm saying. The 3310 or something, I think that was. It's silver buttons. I actually remember that.
It was tiny.
That actually played music as well. It was like almost an MP3.
Do you remember when Bambi came out? Jeez, guys.
Hey, I remember watching.
I was liking
it. How big did they get before they got
smaller? I remember watching the Titanic sink.
Bricks. I remember bricks.
This Ericsson's that came out.
I carried one of those, the communicator, and you had the keyboard. But now we've seen the last couple of years, I think, maybe 2-3 years of the big screen, the phablet, the 5.5 inch above. Everyone was saying it's going to go small again. I don't think so.
But you
I think
the
first for consumption, we're staying 6 inch. It's going to be standard.
They're phasing phablet, the idea of this in-between device, out. It's very much, this is a tablet now, this is a phone.
It hasn't worked. Hey?
The phablet side of it. It was like the laser disc of phones.
No, but I love my...
Do you actually make phone calls on your phablet?
Well, I use a Plus.
Oh, so it's a Plus.
That's not...
I don't count that a phablet.
It's still under the 6 mark. But if it went to 6 even, I'd be happy. I don't think I'd have a problem.
I mean, imagine like...
I did watch some. I did
people do that. No, I've seen people walk with an iPad.
And it looks ridiculous.
Like an iPad mini at their heads.
Don't
you know?
Do that.
And you have to use your entire hand flat on the back of your device to squish it against your hand.
Get a headset.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to call it for this year, though. I'm going to say that the sector is going to be the 5.5 inch above.
Yeah. I think Nokia is going to knock a lot of that. It's going to dictate a lot of how that works as well.
I'm actually very excited about that.
This device for the masses.
I must be honest. But I think by June this year, we're going to see some amazing tech. And you hit the nail on there with battery. They've got to solve this battery problem because the screens are getting bigger. One of the phones I'm going to talk about now has got 8 gigs of RAM.
Yeah, that's great.
In a phone. But you could probably cook a cup of coffee on that thing when the processor starts clocking.
Yeah.
So just back to the Pod 3D as well. I mean, we make content for these devices. So it's one thing that all this great technology exists, but most of the time we use it to access great apps or great content. That then alludes to marketing and strategy. Are you seeing a lot of new strategy being mobile first or device first strategies, or are people still adopting, let's do everything everywhere all the time and hope that something will work?
Well, you know, Red, we always get the question when we sit with clients, and this happens so often, and even when other Brett and I
– B1. Yeah.
B1. And I used to work together years ago. We often got clients asking us, we need an app. And I would
you
say –
you got to do all the education.
Yeah. Why do you need an app? No, everyone has an app.
Yeah, people are downloading apps.
Yes, people – we need an app. So the question that I always pose to clients is – what do you need your app to do?
100%.
What do you need your clients to do?
What are you trying to achieve?
What are you trying to achieve? If you're trying to achieve sales, are you trying to achieve customer support? Or you know, why would you want people to download your app? Because apps, there's so much crap out there.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of apps, need to have a very definite function. It either needs to be very entertaining in terms of a game, or it needs to be educational.
Yeah.
But people are putting apps out there all the time, and I just kind of feel like an app needs to be a very practical, very user-friendly.
Mm. It must have a purpose.
Must have a purpose, absolutely. Yeah. But we are finding a lot of our clients are kind of leaning back towards web now.
Responsive web, mobile-first.
We called that 6 months ago. Huh?
Yeah.
The Apple DAR. Yeah. In fact, B3, so Brett St. Clair, he said he actually made a very valid comment. For someone like a bank, where you've got so much security requirements and passwords and authentication, apps won't die. You'd have to always have that thing on your device.
Is incredible. Yeah.
But for the brand, we don't need apps anymore. We just go straight to the responsive side. Because let's be honest, when they're inside your app and they're doing something, then they're going to click out to your website anyway.
Absolutely.
Just go straight to absolutely.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So absolutely to AR. Because we do love AR. So this article was called Royal Philips, and I didn't quite get it until I actually started reading. I didn't know that Philips, as in the electronic company, they called Royal Philips. And this is just this branch somewhere. But Royal Philips, I'm going to quote it as it is, have developed AR that can help provide surgeons access to their patients through surgical procedures. So what they're saying is the technology is designed that the surgeons perform image-guided open and minimum invasive spine surgery. So in the old days, if you had to have spine surgery or back surgery, they would literally cut you from the top to the bottom and fuse discs and whatever they need to do. But they literally splayed you like a spatchcock chicken. They were chunk.
Yeehaw, there's an image.
Now they say just a small incision, and this is obviously where Philips comes into it. They put in a little camera.
Is it laparoscopic?
Surgery. You're too technical for me. I don't know.
3 points.
But then the camera will overlay an augmented reality view onto the patient. So the doctor can see, inverted commas, what's happening inside without having to go inside.
That's incredible.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
So they're literally talking about pinhole cameras, and they make a hole, put it in, it'll augment. So they can see, oh, well, there's the problem, or there's the nerve that's trapped, whatever. And then they only have to target that area. So then they actually cut you open to find out what's wrong.
So surgery becomes a lot less invasive.
100%.
That's incredible.
Now, if they're doing that on the spine, then obviously you start looking at the next things, your bypass, your when they have to do the colonoscopies and that. Oh, they shove a thing down your mouth and you have to swallow it and it goes all the way through your intestines. And, you know, now, small insertion, put the camera in and actually augment it on top of the patient. That's the only way I can describe it. I just think that's a great use of augmented reality.
So take a bold prediction for like 25 to 50 years from now, like the Arthur C. Clarke type prediction. And that type of stuff is great, but we're also looking at nanotechnology and medicine as well.
Yeah.
It's only a matter of time before you have like location-based services within a body telling nanotechnology where the kidney is or the appendix is and going in via whatever orifice that they can get in and getting it sorted out via without literally
sounds
having
like
any
a horror cuts. Movie. Attack of the nanobots.
A bunch of nanobots go inside you. They grab whatever it is they want and they come and deliver it
to you
some other way.
Yeah.
It gets out of you by another means. But that's stuff that could start to happen. But eventually, you just have a person that checks into a booth and says, I'm here for my appendectomy. I'm going to sit here or lie down here for a little while. And some guy connects in from India probably and says, I've got a preset for an appendectomy. Okay, fantastic. You're a human. Let's do a scan. You have an appendix. That's fantastic. You are human. That's two things you've checked off. And you're still living at this current point in time.
Fantastic.
Push go. Nanobots attack. Rock and roll. But I mean, why that could be the future.
Okay, so I'll tell you where the problem's going to come in. This goes back to what I was saying earlier. We know that voice is the future. Everything's voice controlled. So you're lying there, your little bot's inside, your phone rings, you pick up, you go, oh, my heart is broken. And the little bot hears that and goes, oh, shit. And head straight to the heart.
Okay, Google.
Have you seen that video? It was floating around on Facebook with that guy with the Scottish accent that was trying to get 11. Up the elevator.
Yeah. 11.
11.
<That's> 11. Siri. Yeah, are you having a go at Siri?
No.
I'm sorry, I have a go at Siri. Siri and Apple Maps are the two waste of time products that have come out
Google
of Apple.
Google Maps is amazing.
And I agree 100%.
I like Waze.
But that's also, I use Waze as well.
Crowdsourced.
Only because you want to see where the roadblocks are.
No. Yeah, that's not true.
Pig spotter.
Yeah.
So that was a nice way of me leading into Apple. So they are rumored to release augmented reality glasses. Now, I know it was
augmented reality like glass.
You see?
Like Google
I knew people was going to say, oh, it's called Google Glass. It's not, because Google Glass failed. And you'll like this part.
Or it's Microsoft's, what was this?
HoloLens.
HoloLens.
No, but they didn't make a glass properly. They made like a whole freaking helmet. HoloLens is a whole, and we gave Microsoft kudos on HoloLens conference when they put the whole avatar dude there at your table.
And the Facebook VR AR.
Why this will work where glass failed. First of all, Cole's Ice. Okay, so they've gone to the guys that are leading lens technology. Yeah. We know their space in VR already. But they have 600 engineers working on just the 3D sensor. Typical Apple fashion, over-engineer everything, get it to, you know.
Make sure there are no bubbles.
They've headhunted Magic Leap's former employees, and they've headhunted Oculus Research scientists as well.
Yeah.
So you've got some incredible powerhouse people working
on this
tech.
Because they want to push experience.
But they're going with glasses. They're not. Google Glass failed because it was have you ever looked through Google Glass? It's actually terrible. It's like you've got a dot in your eye. So it's a little thing that sits here.
Yes.
And then you kind of like look up into it and it inverted commas projects onto your eye. This will be glasses. So the Colzeiss lens will manufacture your prescription glasses, and it'll have the intelligence inside the glass using sensor tech.
That's incredible.
And they're talking about this year. So maybe
this year, 2017 still.
Yeah, they're talking. Again, you never know with Apple.
That's a great idea.
The phone's going to make coffee. It's going to get you, I don't know, Angelina Jolie's phone number. I don't know. Apple can do everything. But apparently this year we're going to see some form of augmented reality play. Now, Celeste, you know this. With Mateo, okay, which was probably undisputed the best AR engine in the world.
Hands down, they bought them. Yeah, I know they did.
So they bought the best engine. They've engaged the guys that pioneered Oculus. They're getting Israelis to work on sensors for them, which is the same as getting Indians to work on a call center. You just don't get better. you know? So we're going to see. And if they're talking about this year, and what's his name? Tim. He's been talking about AR now for 2 or 3 years. Okay? You've got Project Tango. You've got all these things that are playing in AR space. Apple has to do something.
Do you know, if they've got Mateo behind them.
That's what I'm saying.
And the Geneo.
It's been 2 years, eh? They've had Mateo for 2 years. A year.
Yeah.
A whole year they've already had them. Closed shop, done.
I remember. That was a big blow for us.
Yeah.
You know, being that we are Geneo certified and we had all their software and had bought all their licensing and everything, it was a massive blow for us when they decided, well, guys, we're going to close shop. We've been bought out. Goodbye. And we kind of got a month's notice, which is great.
No,
do you remember?
I remember that. It was a very expensive month for us.
At the end
of the year as well. Happy holidays.
Yes. So, they've got to come out with something amazing, and I think they know it.
Yeah.
Because everyone's kind of had a stab at it. Some have been better than others, but they've got to make good.
And I think we'll see it.
I think
when's the big thing? It's September, huh? Apple.
It's usually September.
They're probably going to have two this year.
Yeah, they always have the iPad, MacBook story now, like March. And then they have Apple Music. The iTunes Festival is like July. And then they do the September.
I think the Google Developer Conference will be pretty interesting.
Yeah, they've done some incredible stuff.
We were quite excited after the last.
Yeah, they've
we
done.
We needed a 2-hour slot just to go and talk about that. So.
They've done. Well, we were supposed to wrap up on CS, and I see we're almost at the top of the hour again.
We'll,
I'm going to just leave it and.
I think the wrap up of CS will be the next 6 months, to be honest, because I think there's so much that's happened, and there's always new stuff. And it's actually sometimes more important to see how it impacts the consumer space rather than just saying, well, we predict that this might be cool. When it actually hits the space and we see what people are doing with it, that's where the true. Testers.
So ITSA, like EAT and SA, ITSA, it's not somewhere in South Africa, it's in America. It's the first fast food chain with zero human interaction. It is the coolest thing. Brett, Google it. If you find the link, push it out there. I'm going to try and describe it because this is obviously a listening experience, not a visual one. But basically, you walk into the shop and they've got these podiums with iPads or whatever the tablet is, and you choose your food. Okay, so it's very healthy food. It's like quinoa and kale and salads and all these type of things.
Awesome.
So you select it, you add your dressing, you don't add your dressing, you know, whatever you want to do. You push the button, you pay. So you're paying on the device. It's all taken care of. And then if you ever looked at those sci-fi movies when people sleep in those like bunks, like they've got these rows of bunks with little glass doors, if you picture like mini, they actually look like microwaves. So picture maybe 20 or 30 microwaves all on top of each other. The window, the glass, is smart glass. So your number and name appears when your food's ready. So the window gets like this red circle, like 41, that's your order number. Or if you've put your name into the system, it'll say, Celeste, your food is ready. And then behind is the kitchen. So the people get the order, they make the food, they prep and they put it in, and then you just lift up the glass and take it out. But the front end of the shop is totally, totally zero human interaction. That is cool. You know, like you get the robots that make stuff for you, and I think you get some robot bars and robot coffee bars. But in a high society where people are eating fast on the go, now you've got a healthy option where you're not standing in a queue. Because to employ a person at minimum wage is so many dollars. Now you've got tablets, and you can put 50 tablets in if you want. You know what I mean? So your queue's reduced. Your people are creating what they want. The people put the stuff together, whack it in. But just the experience,
experience. The space is clean and uncluttered.
It's white. This little logo glows up on the screen telling your number's ready.
Check it out.
You tweeted it out. Awesome.
Where is this? Where
in the States, they've done the first one.
Okay.
ITSA. I guarantee you'll see one in Dubai next, because that's where the guys will take the concept to prove it, and then you'll see a global rollout.
Cool website, man.
It is nice,
It's a great website.
The whole experience. touching it, feeling it, engaging with it. I'm sure the food's great. Guys, we're at the top of the hour. We're like going to get fingers soon. I wanted to also do one other thing. You go back to this day and time. I got that. I like digital jargon because we live in this world where there's just so much jargon. So, do you know what growth hacking means? Do you? Anyone? Growth hacking?
I think
hacking.
You told me.
I'll probably tell everyone everything. I just don't even remember half the time. So I'm going to tell you because we're running out of time. So growth hacking is a process of rapid experimentation across marketing channels and product development to identify the most effective, efficient ways to grow a business.
Oh.
So what they're saying is growth hackers are not only marketers anymore. Mm-hmm. Now they're engineers, product managers that actually focus on building and engaging a user base.
Okay.
And that's what Eats is all about.
Cool.
They've actually sat down, they've said, how do we make something that's marketable, bringing new marketing people? Excuse me. How do we make it that you want to touch it, bring in a UI experience, a UX designer, like you just said, from the website.
Yep.
And then when you walk into the shop, you bring in an engineer or an architect, whatever. So growth hacking is what we're going to start seeing this year. So when guys start talking about we need a growth hack or whatever, they're not actually talking about a hack, like in the traditional hackathon or whatever. It's a growth hacking. How to help your business through growth hacking.
In the lean startup mentality, that's the lean startup's got a thing called MVP, obviously minimum viable product. You get that out first, and then from there you start build, measure, learn iterations, which is very much growth hacking. Cool. So it's just the same sort of ideologies have been around. It's nice that it's we've got some catchy
now we have something to have in our digital
hacking.
Jargon.
Awesome.
So I got the finger. You got the finger. We all got the finger. Are we done?
I have a thought for the day.
Yes, please.
It's a quote from Arthur C. Clarke, the sort of the father of the future, if we can. He's got a quote that says, the information age has been driven and dominated by technopreneurs. We now have to apply these technologies in saving lives, improving livelihoods, and lifting millions of people out of squalor, misery, and suffering. In other words, our focus must now move from the geeks to the meek. And I think that's a pretty cool,
that is a cool
quote from many, many decades ago. That's
correct.
Still very appropriate today.
It is.
Even more so
today, because we can actually make a difference.
It was nice to have a female in the studio for a
thanks,
change. It definitely pretties things up and lightens it up. So, Sel, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, guys.
Pod3D.co.za. Cool.
That's the one.
Nordia Celeste. At Nordia Celeste. N-A-U-D-E Celeste.
Yep.
All right. Check the tweets.
Anything,
all right.
Give us a call.
Sweet
Cheers.
Bananas. All right. So,
until next time,
keep your screens clean and your knobs. Whoa, my mic went off. And your knobs shiny. CliffCentral.com.